Welcome to Growth Marketing Today, where marketers, designers, and product owners level up their growth marketing chops from experts in today's top startups. Here's your host, Ramley John.
Welcome to episode 54 of Growth Marketing Today. I'm your host, Ramley John, and I'm here on a mission to help marketers and founders like you sharpen their marketing skills by talking to some of today's top experts. Today, I had the pleasure of talking to the incredible Juliana Castle. She's currently the head of marketing services at ClearBank, but prior to that, she was head of marketing at Crazy Egg. Juliana led the growth team there at hitting its highest monthly revenue in 2 years. She opens up about the content, email, and acquisition strategies she implemented to achieve Crazy Egg's highest monthly revenue and increase their trial to paid conversions by 75%. This episode is going to be value-packed. It's going to be a goldmine, so good. Now, I have created a growth cheat sheet with how Juliana was able to do this. It's so good that this cheat sheet is normally 1 to 2 pages. This cheat sheet is 3 pages long. This episode is that good. So why take notes from this podcast episode when you can just steal mine? Just download it. Get it at growthtoday.fm/54. Now, this will only be up until Tuesday, August 20th. That's when I release the next podcast episode. So get it now. You can find the link also in the description of wherever you get a podcast. If you're listening to this episode after Tuesday, August 20th, I'm sorry you missed it. So subscribe to this podcast wherever you get your podcast so you don't miss any episode. Now, please support this podcast. I'm not sure if you know this. I will say this podcast is a one-man show. I actually record, edit, and create all my marketing materials for this podcast. I made it easy for you to support this podcast if you enjoyed it so far. First, share the quote on Twitter or LinkedIn. Tell a friend about it. You can get the quotes at growthtoday.fm/54 and tweet out a quote from this episode. Second, you can join the Grow Today tribe and I'll send you any cheat sheet in the future by email. I'll also tell you who my next guests are and you can ask questions to that person via email and I'll shout you out. Third, I have opened up a Patreon for this. For as little as $2 per episode, you get exclusive access to content such as a personal handwritten thank you note with stickers mailed to you, early access to podcasts 1 day before the release, access to all the Grow Cheat Sheets. I am going through every podcast episode and creating it manually, so I'm doing that for you. You can get access to private Grow Today Tribe Slack group, and you get to listen in live to a podcast recording on a select ones for the future and more. Now, my goal is to raise $200 per episode so I can really focus all my energy on finding more amazing guests and putting together smart questions from community members like you. Now, you can go to patreon.com/growtoday. There is a special there for an early adopter for as little as $2 per episode at a 75% discount. You get everything the highest level, which is unicorn supporter with this. Now, with that, I announce that I have two Patreon supporters, early adopters. First is Jamie Ward from Las Vegas. I thank you, Jamie. And second is Veronica from London, UK. I really appreciate that. Enough about me. Let's jump in my chat with Juliana.
Hey, everybody. I have here Juliana. I'm so excited to chat with her. I've been following her on Twitter and we've been chatting over there. How is it going, Juliana? How's your morning?
Oh, man, it's going great. This is my fourth week at ClearBank, and we have this thing called Founder School, where we train new employees on who we are, why we do what we do, figuring out what entrepreneurs need from us and how we can support them. And so today, this morning, we have a theory of the sales demo training. And as a marketer, it's always amazing if you can listen in on these presentations that the VP of sales does, because, you know, I get the leads for them, but then I don't always know what happens to them once I hand them off. And so seeing what a demo is like, and they're doing all this role playing exercises, it's really fascinating. So I'm really enjoying the morning so far.
Seems like ClearBank is hiring a lot of folks. How many people are there now?
Oh my gosh. So I started June 24th. It's been 4 weeks. My cohort was 20 people and that put us over the line of 100 people. So now I think we're 115 or something like that. But rumor has it we'll be 200 by the end of this year.
Oh my goodness.
Which is crazy. We're actually, we were just discussing, I was talking to Romley about how later today we're going to go see a new office space because we're rapidly running out of desks and chairs. So
that's so funny. And the founders of ClearBank is quite famous. One of them is Dragon's Den, and the other one has been around in the startup scene for a while, right?
Yeah, it's funny. So they're not only are they both really badass entrepreneurs themselves, but they are dating. I don't know if you know that.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so they started dating before they even co-founded ClearBank. But we were on this work retreat a couple weeks ago, and we had an AMA where they were like, literally ask us anything. So one person, this is anonymously submitted, they're like, so what's it like dating someone more famous than you?
Oh, man.
To Andrew. And it's so funny because, you know, like Michelle's the face of ClearBank. She's on our homepage. Like, you know, she's the star of Dragon's Den. And Andrew's this really amazing tech entrepreneur and like has like had all these successful exits and like really in deep with the Silicon Valley scene. So he's also famous, but just in a like less public way, I guess. And he just sort of laughed. He thought it was hilarious as a question. But yeah, they're both just low key, really, amazing. Really awesome.
It must be quite easy to hire folks than having such famous or well-known founders, right?
Yeah, it's funny. We actually just put out an offer to a marketing designer for our team, and we thought it'd be really cool to send him a video saying how excited we were that we were making him the offer, but he accepted before we even had the time to do it. So yeah, people get really excited cool. about joining, which is great. I mean, you know, employer branding is so important. Mm. People knowing who your company is and what you stand for is so important. The fact that we've got all this buzz around the company is amazing to be part of. And, you know, being part of the first 100 people before we really explode is just really an honor. So it's great to be here.
That's amazing. Let's talk about you now. I want to know your career journey because it's been really fascinating. You were at Crazy Egg, head of marketing there before that, but I want to talk way before that, where you were a freelance correspondent, and I looked this up on LinkedIn, freelance correspondent of American Craft Beer, and now you're head of marketing of this rocket ship of a startup. How did you get there?
You make it sound like I jumped from like beer journalist to head of marketing at ClearBank. So yeah, it's a crazy journey. I like to explain my LinkedIn profile as it's not a ladder so much as a jungle gym. Like I just sort of, and that's a Sheryl Sandberg quote. I can't take credit for that analogy, but I think it's great. I mean, I always worried as I was hopping from job to job that someone would look at my resume and think I couldn't stay anywhere for too long, or that I, you know, was like some millennial who just like had no focus. But honestly, it's just been a lot of really cool slices of marketing that I've gotten familiar with because the companies I worked at specialized in those slices. And so just to give you like a quick, you know, 60-second overview, if you haven't seen my LinkedIn profile for those who are listening. So my trajectory is like I was an English major in the early thousands, was a giant book nerd, loved going to the library, getting stacks of books, reading them under the covers with a flashlight, completely like ruined my vision. But it's okay. We have contact lenses for that. And, you know, back then, content marketing wasn't a concept. Facebook basically was for throwing sheep at your friends. If you weren't around in those days, like actually just ask someone who's a millennial, they'll tell you. It's crazy. This is the era, like this is, I feel like I have to say gather around children. I'm going to tell you of a time before the internet when Netflix was sent to you in the mail.
Oh my goodness. I was there.
But yeah. It's crazy when you think about it now. But yeah, so I sort of stumbled my way into being behind the scenes of being a proofreader and a copy editor and then a writer at a travel company. And then I landed my first role at Skyward, which is this content marketing platform. And it was really important for my career path because it was my first startup and it was also my first experience with content marketing as a concept. So, you know, SEO was starting to become a thing, inbound marketing was starting to become a thing you could study and be good at. And so because of that, I got really familiar with all these concepts that became super important to what I do now. But back then it was, no one knew what the salary was for a content marketing associate. There was no real path to move up the ladder as a career. You know, American Craft Beer was just my side hustle because I wanted a creative outlet. It wasn't my full-time job. It wasn't a paid gig, but it was amazing because they got to send me to, I went to Bonnaroo 3 years in a row and got to attend as media for free and hobnob with all these brewers in the brewery tent, which is a dream. My favorite story is the guy who does press for Hanson, the band that sings Umbop, sent me an email one day and he's like, hey, I don't know if you know this, but Hansen has their own beer that they're producing. It's called, wait for it, Hops.
No,
you're joking. I'm not kidding. And I was like, wait a minute. Hansen has their own beer and I've loved them since 1997. And you're telling me you want to send me some of it so I can write about it? It was the best day of my entire life. So, yeah, it was like this side hustle before our side hustles were cool. But I got to, interview brewers and go to tap takeovers at bars and be friends with people in the hospitality industry. I got to be a judge in some crazy, like, news publications, a contest for the best bar in Boston. It was amazing. It was a great time. But yeah, that was sort of a side diversion. It was just sort of, I didn't have a creative outlet in my day job. I was writing these horrendous email blasts for Tech Target. So I was like, I need something that uses the rest of my brain because this is 10% of what I can do. So that was just fun. But yeah, I did get my feet under me on being a journalist, interviewing people, putting together stories, building my portfolio. So, you know, content marketing, it's show don't tell. So I could tell you I'm a really good writer, but how about I just show you all these amazing articles I wrote for AmericanCraftBeer.com. So it just sort of started skyward, to kind of go back to the content marketing platform thing, kind of kickstarted my love of startups and, you know, how nimble you have to be, how fast you have to be at acquiring new skills, because every day you're given something you've never done before and you're just trusted to figure it out. And if you don't, pretty quickly you get buried with other requests. So as sort of a defensive measure, you just get this muscle of, so yesterday I actually downloaded Sketch for the first time and I had to figure out how to update a deck for our partnerships team. Cool. And it's like, okay, I guess I learned Sketch now. This is what I do.
That's super cool. So when it comes to beer, I have to ask this. What is your favorite beer then?
Oh, no, you can't ask me that. That's like asking who your favorite child is if you have 10 children.
So, okay, that's better yet. If you, at end of the day, you're tired, you've been working late at night.
Yeah.
You come home, what beer do you open?
Okay, that's a better question. So there is this really good guava sour that Blood Brothers in Toronto makes, and that is my favorite summer jam so far.
Cool. All right, I'm gonna go check it out. Let's talk about Toronto. I know you moved from Boston to Toronto. I want to know what the difference in texting is. So you've worked at Boston. Now you're working for a Toronto startup. What do you see as the difference and what are the similarities?
It's actually very similar in a lot of ways. There is a great startup ecosystem here. There's a lot of accelerators. There's a fair amount of venture capital, but you know, it's also very overlooked because it's not New York and it's not San Francisco. Mm. And I get the sense it's harder to get capital here than it would be if you were on the West Coast of the States. So there's sort of an inferiority complex kind of thing, or a like defensive kind of, yeah, we're amazing, but no one knows about us vibe. And it's just been amazing to get adopted so quickly. I moved here in December of 2018 and it was the dead of winter, not the best time to move to Canada whatsoever, but my husband's job started January 3rd, so I had no choice. At least I had the right outerwear. Like Boston, you also have to wear a ton of layers and just be comfortable being miserable for 4 months straight. But yeah, I met one person who'd introduced me to another person who introduced me to her whole crew of people that she was friends with in VC. And now I have this posse of 15 really amazing women that I get to roll with to networking events and conferences. So it's been so nice. And I had the same thing in Boston, but it took me way longer to build it, which is funny. But I was there 8 years. And so like now I have my posse over there too. But I feel like, I don't know, I hit the accelerator here somehow. And it's been like just 7 months of just really throwing myself into the ecosystem and going to all these networking events and really telling people I'm new, please help me, I'm not Canadian. And they do, they help. They're just so nice.
So Canadians are nicer, would you say that?
I would say the stereotype is 100% true.
I want to shift gears now and let's jump into marketing. I know I saw one of your presentation at Drifts on conference and you called it getting excited about the unsexy world of CRO. Why do you say CRO is unsexy?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, even when you say it out loud, conversion rate optimization. Okay, cool. I'm just going to go to sleep now. What is that? Yeah. So if you ask a handful of marketers what CRO means, they're all going to say something different. People can't really define it very well. And I find it's very hard to get excited about something you don't understand. And then, you know, it's not a hot term. People aren't buzzing about it in the marketing ecosystem. You know, if you hear SEO, ABM, like video is the hot thing, you know, no one's like, oh, wow, CRO, man. Like, let me tell you how cool it is. No one says that. And, you know, I read a fair amount of publications online about marketing. I don't ever really see it come up as like the top two or three or five things you should be doing, which is really a shame because it's so effective as a strategy. But, you know, my theory about why it hasn't taken off is, you know, you get all these dopamine hits from getting page views on your site or getting likes on your social media posts. And you're like, oh, yes, immediate, you know, return on investment there. CRO, you know, you've got to install something on your site. You got to analyze the data. You got to come to conclusions. You got to do something about those conclusions and take an action and do some testing. And that requires a lot of work and discipline. It doesn't necessarily take a lot of time, but you do have to care enough about it and invest enough about it to like make it part of your weekly routine. And people just don't want to do that. You know, like I kind of liken it to, would you rather go to the gym or would you rather eat a pizza? Like, you know, eating the pizza is not the better option for you in a health way, but it's not fun to go to the gym. So you're going to eat the pizza, right? You're like, CRO is going to the gym for your mind, basically.
I've never heard it called that. That's great. I'm going to say that from now on.
Awesome.
You also suggested in our presentation that folks should do SEO and CRO at the same time, because, you know, a lot of companies, what they do is, oh, let's focus on SEO first, get a bunch of organic traffic later on, we'll figure out how to convert them. And you said that's crazy.
Because, okay, I'm investing in SEO, I'm investing in paid ads, I'm investing in PR, I'm investing in sponsorship booths at conferences. I'm spending a lot of money on getting people to my site. I'm getting, you know, even if it's not money, you know, you'll have a content marketer or two or three on your team whose sole job is to get more traffic through Google search, right? So if it's not indirect dollars, it's indirect resources that you're paying dollars to, right? Okay, cool. You got all the page views. Now what? Are those people converting? Are they buying something? Are they signing up for something? Are they asking for a quote for something? And if your answer isn't no, what are you doing? So if you're doing the SEO and then you're like, oh, shrug, they came to my site. Cool. Like, game over. No, you should be optimizing that traffic. What a waste of time and money. But on the flip side, you know, I find this a lot less that people are only doing CRO and not SEO. But like, let's say that your focus as a growth marketer is optimizing your website to convert the traffic. Cool. But if you're not getting a lot of traffic, then all the work you're doing to optimize your site and make the navigation experience better for your customers is also sort of a waste of time. Really, you should be doing both. Ideally, you know, a 50-50 split of your time doing both. But, you know, I'm a realist. I know SEO is always the sexy thing. So if you only do CRO, you know, half an hour every week, I'll take that. You know, that's a win.
And the reason why we're talking so much about CRO is you were head of marketing at Crazy Egg, and that's what their bread and butter is, pretty much. How did that come about, by the way? Like, did Hidden Shaw reach out to you? Like, how did you get that gig?
Oh, yeah. No, all my gigs for the last three or four gigs have been crazy, weird, third degrees of internet stories. So that one was, so my friend Devin Bramhall, who I became friends with her in Boston, but she moved to New York and now she's the content marketing head at Animals, which is this amazing content marketing agency. She had worked at Help Scout with Sunit Bhatt, who was her boss at the time, and he left to go to Crazy Egg to be the general manager. And he had posted on LinkedIn one day, and I love this. He didn't post a job description of a role he was hiring for in marketing. He said, I have an opening on the Crazy Egg marketing team. I'm not going to tell you what the role is. Instead, I want you to pitch me on what your dream job is. And if it aligns with something I can give you, we'll talk. And so I didn't even see the post, but Devin saw it and she tagged me because she knew I was looking. She said, oh, you should really talk to Sunit. And so I was like, oh, wow, intriguing. This, I've never seen this before. So I sent him this message and I set out to write what I wanted, but I ended up on this epic rant about what I didn't want because I'd been at so many jobs and seen it gone the wrong way with content marketing and being the head of marketing and all these things that kept happening where like I didn't feel supported or that I didn't have enough of a budget or there was no way for me to grow. I was like, so I just went on this therapy session where I'm telling Sunit all the things that I've ever gone wrong in my career, basically. And he writes back and he's like, okay, let's talk. Like, I think I can help you out here. So yeah, then he ended up giving me an assignment. It was a 3-day audit. He just wanted me to go through their website, their social media, their email campaigns, all the marketing realms that I would be touching if I got the job. And he paid me, you know, he's like, what's your consultant fee? Like, do an audit for us. Like, we'll have you for, you know, 72 hours and we'll see what you come up with. And so I gave him this dossier of like, here's a sample Drift playbook we should run on the homepage. And here's 5 onboarding emails we should be sending and gave him all this stuff. And he was like, great, when can you start? And so
that was so cool.
That's how I landed the gig.
Let's talk about that. I know I'm jumping ahead here. And I read in your profile that in your tenure at Crazy Egg, you increased their free trial signups by 75% in 6 months and you helped Crazy Egg hit their highest revenue month in over 2 years. What did you do? Like, I'm really curious, like, what were some of the things that you and your team did to get that amazing result?
It's funny, everyone wants the one magic bullet, like, oh, do this one thing and you'll get like 300% increase and blah, blah, blah. But it was really a lot of different things that tied together really well. So the way I describe it is I basically took the customer experience, like before you're even a customer at Crazy Egg, like how do you land on the site? How do we educate you? How do we push you from lead to someone who's considering it, to someone who signs up for the free trial, to someone who's now onboarded as a new customer, to what educational content do we give you to make sure you're adopting the tool and we're retaining you, and how do we aggressively help you with your problems? And so that boiled down to I looked at our blog and I really hated the design, so I had it overhauled with the help of an agency. The content was very optimized for keywords but not really optimized for human beings to read, so I made sure that I amped up the quality a lot. I overhauled all our email campaigns. So we were sending the same emails to everyone, regardless of what their situation was, using our tools. And so with the help of our product marketing manager, we took a very deep pass at updating that. We actually brought in Val Geisler to help us as well, which was great. Working with her was a dream. She's just such a talented copywriter. Once we had someone in the dashboard and we were sending them emails, how do we educate them as they go through all the tools that we offer? So then I convinced our GM to invest in AppQues. I love them. They're out of Boston and they're just incredible. Like, it's so intuitive as a tool. We have all these little checklists and pop-ups when you first log in as a customer at Crazy Egg. Now you see a guided tour of all the different features and how they all complement each other. And we have explanations of what the different reports are with examples and videos. So that was a really big game changer for our retention rate. On top of that, I started analyzing the CRO ecosystem and saying, okay, you know, who could be a good partner for us with co-marketing? So we ended up doing a webinar with Zayas and a webinar with The Good. And they're a conversion rate optimization agency that works a lot with e-commerce brands. And Crazy Egg does a lot of e-commerce brand work as well. So that was a really easy one. We partnered with Deborah from guessthetest.com. So she does A-B tests where you have to guess what you think the winning variant is, which is super fun. So I just started building this repository of content with these partners. And it's great because they share the content with their audience. So we're getting new leads, but it's also like we're sharing their stuff on our blog and email blast. So it's really complimentary. So just this whole start to finish analysis of all the touch points that we have with a lead who becomes a customer, who hopefully becomes a paying customer, who hopefully tells their friends and refers. All of that led to the outcome, but it wasn't any one thing. I'm sorry if you wanted a magic bullet, but I mean, it's going to give you,
I think it's perfect.
Yeah. 7 things to do.
If you said a magic bullet, I wouldn't believe you. So this is perfect.
Awesome.
And I'm going to break this down if you don't mind. What didn't you like about the blog that you, it's like, oh, this sucks, I'm going to change this up. Was there anything particular that you didn't like? And what did you change?
I see this everywhere. And especially if you go to a site like Forbes, I'm just going to call it Forbes.
Yeah,
they
Forbes
are
sucks.
Awful.
Yep.
You go and you don't even have time to, it's like 3 seconds. Like the page is still loading and you see 5 pop-ups and it's a video yep. ad and it's like someone yelling at you on the right-hand column. And then there's this like sign up for our newsletter. I haven't even read the article yet. I haven't read a sentence. And you're just like, bah! Like, so when I first looked at Crazy X blog when I was doing the audit, I just sort of facepalmed because there were, I think, I'm not even kidding, like 5 CTAs.
No.
No, I have a screenshot of it.
That's amazing.
It was so bad. And you haven't convinced anyone, you know, even given any value and you're asking for their email. It's just not good. Like, and I get it because content marketing, like you got to bring in the leads and how do you bring in the leads? You ask them for their email, but like don't ask them for the email before they haven't read a sentence yet. Mm. And so that was really the hill I was going to die on at Crazy Egg was let's get rid of all of these things and like amp up the value of the content. And then crazy thought, maybe people will want to give us their email once they've found that we're actually helping them with their problems the way that the tool solves their problems. And so, you know, oh, if they know what they're talking about with how I can analyze my homepage or how I can run an A/B test, maybe they know what they're talking about when it comes to the product they've created, right? So that's the crazy theory. So I had to put my foot down and say, listen, there's a better way. There's got to be ways for people to navigate the content so they can find the topic they want easier. You know, it was like adding categories and making it really easy for people to jump around. How do we link our historic content to our new content and vice versa? All this stuff that, because we had so many blog posts, I think we had 500 when I joined. That's a lot of work, even just updating and maintaining things. And so it's like, let's do a cleanup there. So visually it was very flat. Everything had the same treatment. So how do we call out things like an ebook versus a blog post versus what's popular? So a lot of it was kind of UX stuff. So I really got my hands dirty. It was the first time I was allowed to go in and say, okay, what would I want in my ideal scenario? So that was a really exciting project.
It's something that I see certain websites do a lot is the pop-up. Even if you go to something like neilpatel.com, you're bombarded by like 10 pop-ups asking for email. It might work, right? The email convert, they might be getting a lot of emails, but the experience isn't that great. So I guess you got to find a balance. Like, should you focus on trying to get email signups or the user experience? In your opinion, where's the balance between that? Like, oh, I want to try to get as many emails as possible and annoy my users.
Yeah, so there's all kinds of tools now where you can have something pop up on a timer, right? So at least let them get halfway down the page before you do that. Like that's at least a fair game. You know, they've engaged for like, let's say, so at Crazy Egg, the content was really long. Like our average blog post was 2,000 words or more.
Wow.
Usually it's 2,500, honestly. And so if you've gotten halfway down the page, you've probably spent at least 3 or 5 minutes with us, you know, so that's a fair signal that you probably want more content from us. So I'd feel less bad serving you a pop-up. You can also embed ads, quote unquote, as a banner. You know, if you're reading a post about heat maps and I have a banner there and it's not a pop-up, it's just sort of embedded in the page as a graphic. And it says, hey, you want to learn how you can apply heat maps to your product pages? You know, click here to learn more. And it's a sign up page. Like that's cool. That's fair play. It's more of an organic ad play. So that's good. You can take it out of the blog post itself, but have it on the right hand side as like a floating banner that follows them, but they can ignore it if they want. You know, there are ways to kind of soft shoe it so it's not so in your face. And, you know, obviously on the blog page itself, when you land there, you can have a big thing on the top that says, you know, sign up for email list. So there's ways around it. You can definitely still do it. It just doesn't have to be the first 5 seconds. Like, let someone breathe for God's sake.
And I think the advantage of that is the people who do get provide the email, they're probably more qualified because you've given them value already. They know what they're signing up for, and they're probably, your open rates for your email list will probably be a lot higher.
Yeah. What's the trade-off?
People who sign up right away.
You also have to think, I might get more signups, but are those people the right people, and are they going to engage? Because that's the big thing is, great, I've got this massive list, but if my open rate's 12%, is that really a win?
True. I want to go to the next part. You talked about email campaigns and you had Valgeister work with you. I actually just had her on the podcast. I'm curious, what particular email campaigns did you change? You talked about like customizing it for different types of user trials. Is that correct?
Yeah. So this is a really cool project. Again, something I hadn't done before. So, I mean, props to startups for letting me just try things and trust me to not mess it up. But, so we were using, I advocated for us to start using Drip as our email service provider, and they have really cool branching capabilities where you fire something against what action someone's taking in your dashboard in your product. So if someone signs up as a free trial customer at Crazy Egg and they look at a heat map for the first time, we can fire off an email that's like, congrats, you've looked at your first heat map. Here's some pro tips on how to interpret it. Or let's say they don't look at the heat map for a certain amount of days, then we hit them with a message that says, hey, like, notice you haven't looked at your heat map yet. Is it because you don't understand why you would need it? Here's a video explaining in 60 seconds what they are and what they're good for. And then it gets even crazier. It gets like Bandersnatch level from Netflix, where it's like, oh, do you pick the cereal or do you pick the orange juice?
That's so cool.
So it's like, if they do something that you want them to do, how do you get them to take the next step that you want them to do? So how do you apply the knowledge you learned in the heat map to doing an A/B test? You can drop them into different campaigns depending on what they do. So like, you can split off in one way, but then reunite them with the original thread once they've done an action. Wow. So it's crazy. So Val was really helpful in nailing the first few emails that we send people, because if you're not compelling within one or two emails, you can lose the person, right? They won't log back into the dashboard. And so she was just sort of really amping up our personality as a company and being playful with the way that we're trying to get people to talk to us, and really highlighting the different people in Crazy Egg that would be helping you along your journey as a Crazy Egg customer. She's very clever with subject lines. It's, you know, I, as a marketer, I'm very critical of what people send me. And I feel bad for all these vendors and salespeople who try to like holler at me and get my 15 minutes, because I never give it to them. But you know the boilerplate like tactics they're using in there, like using the re, even though it's not a reply, or using an emojis to the nth degree, or like all this stuff, you know. And so she's very anti best practices. She always finds a new way to say something, so it grabs your attention. And so just seeing the way that her brain works with that was just really cool, because I know exactly what you're trying not to do, because I've seen it be bad so often every day in my inbox.
That's great. No, that's definitely what she talked about in the podcast. She also talked about like this dinner party strategy where, you know, you don't want to bombard people right away, which she were talking about in the blog. And the third thing that I want to ask about the process that you talked about is, you did a lot of co-marketing, you said. And another podcast episode that I had with Gia Lotti, she was the former VP marketing at Adbounce. She said SaaS relationships are everything. That includes partnerships. How did you decide who to partner with, and how did you make sure those co-marketing campaigns like with Zeiss or other partners were successful?
Yeah. So who do I choose to partner with? It's a matter of paying attention online. Who's doing really cool webinars? Who's got a great social presence? Whose emails do I really admire? Who's at the conferences that complement whatever the company I'm at the time is at too? And so I'll have my wish list, you know, and I'll reach out to whoever their marketing person is and just say, hey, do you want to be friends? Like, let's make this work for both of us. And then from there, if they're responsive, we'll put together some sort of action plan, whether it's what form is this going to take? Do we want to do a blog post first, see how it goes, and then scale it up to a webinar? Mm-hmm. Do we want to do a co-marketing piece at a conference where we're, you know, co-speakers or you're on our panel? Like, how do we make this work? What form does it take? And then you really have to put expectations up front on timeline for when things are getting done, who owns what part of the process. I gotta stay in constant communication. Make sure you, if you say you're going to be on a call, you're on a call. You're not moving things three times and giving someone whiplash on Zoom. The best person I've ever saw for this was, when I was at Crazy Egg before I left, we were launching this A/B testing webinar, co-marketing, panel, with Path Factory, and, Amanda Levine was our point of contact there. And she is so impressive with her outreach to people who are co-marketing with them for this. Mm. I've never seen the level of organization and attention to detail and expectation setting. Like, she had this whole document that was custom graphics you could use on social media. There's copy paste text you could just drop in on LinkedIn. They told you exactly what they needed from you to see this as successful as a partnership. So she said, you know, like, we want our hope and you know, this is something you're gonna have to make happen, is we need you to send this to, I think they're like, we want 500 high quality leads from your email list that are director level or above. Like, it was this really in-depth instructional guide to how to make them happy and how to make all of us happy. And so I was like, that's so smart and great and helpful, because I don't have to chase you for information. I know exactly where the resources are. I don't have to have my social media person create content. It's already there. You're making it so joyful to work with you. So I just want to do it again, you know?
And how do you make sure that's win-win? Like, they're asking for your help to get them leads. Do you try to ask them to get you leads as well?
Oh yeah, of course. It's always got to be reciprocal. Like, you don't do things out of the goodness of your heart usually, in marketing. So yeah, it's, you know, not, I don't want to say what's in it for me, but we definitely had a kickoff conversation where we both said what we thought a win would be on either side. And so for me, it was, you know, do we get access to the email list once the webinar is done so we can follow up with a special offer? And she said, oh, of course, you know, that's no problem. And so, yeah, just making sure that it's not a one-sided relationship is really important.
And sorry, what was her name? I'm going to try to get her on this podcast.
Amanda Levine.
All right, I'll reach out to her.
Yeah, she's incredible.
Let's shift gears a bit, and you transitioned from Crazy Egg to now ClearBank. First of all, what is ClearBank? If people, my listeners don't know.
So we actually just went through this amazing positioning exercise
with April Dunford.
April Dunford, yeah. So our new explanation is ClearBank is fast, affordable growth capital.
Nice.
Yeah.
It's perfect. And it's for businesses. Is it for anybody?
So our bread and butter is e-commerce companies that are making 10K a month in revenue or more. We also fund B2B SaaS companies, and we're also getting into the mobile app space. Wow. We fund companies that are in Canada, the US, and the UK, but we are going to expand beyond that next year.
And I want to know how that came about, because you had an interesting one with Crazy Egg where they asked you to pitch a role. How was the process here? How did you go about getting this role?
Yeah, like I said, my last four jobs have just been so randomly orchestrated. But this was, I think this is awesome, actually. I was at, I think it was Inbound. So I was at Inbound last year in Boston. So it's HubSpot's big conference every year. And there was an after party. Oh, no, sorry. This wasn't last year. This is actually 3 years ago. So this is 2016. And I'm at this after party at Wistia, which is this amazing video hosting platform in Boston. And so I'm at their cool office having a beer. And this, I hate calling people girls, but women or ladies also sounds weird to me. This awesome
female
who was visiting from Vancouver, and she was working at Unbounce at the time, and her name's Stephanie Greaser. She's also an incredible human. So we struck a conversation. She's amazing. We hit it off immediately. I was like, this person has to be my friend. So when she went back to Canada, we became Twitter friends, and we kept in touch on and off through the 3 years. And then when I announced on Twitter I was moving to Canada, she shot me this DM and she's like, oh my God, welcome. So excited to have you. We should catch up. It's been a while. Like, let's do a video chat. I'll catch you up on what's been going on in my world and what I've been doing post imbalance. And you can tell me about your experience moving and all stuff. So I had a great conversation with her on video, and she's doing this incredible side hustle where she's doing a boot camp. She's training women to be speakers at conferences. So it's called Shine Boot Camp, and it's just such a cool concept. It's 18 women that they train for a long weekend, and they help you with your deck. They help you with your staging and blocking and making sure you're an effective speaker. They unite you with opportunities at different events. It's just so awesome and so needed. And so she was telling me about all this stuff, and I was like, wow, like, you've really done some amazing stuff like between the last time I talked to you 3 years ago and now. And she's like, yeah, and you know, how are things going at Crazy Egg? And I was like, oh yeah, things are good. You know, I kind of want a Canada-based job though, because, you know, this is my first foray into Toronto, and you know, it'd be really awesome to have a resource where I'm meeting new people via my coworkers. And I kind of miss having an office because Crazy Egg was a remote company. Mm. And so she's like, oh, okay, noted. And then about 2 months later, I think it's like March or April, she shoots me an email and she goes, not sure if you're still considering looking around, but I know this guy, Kent, who works as head of growth at ClearBank, and you should have a chat with him. He's looking to hire someone. And I said, okay, sure. I had never heard of ClearBank or Kent, but we have a great phone chat for an hour and a half. We're vibing, we're sharing ideas. Like, he's really excited about my background. He's telling me about ClearBank and it sounds awesome. So there was no job description. There was no title. He just said, you should come in next week and meet a few people on different teams. And so I was, sure, okay, shrug. Yeah, I'll come in. And then I knew at that point that the co-founders were kind of a big deal. Michelle was on the call back in San, which if you're a US-based person, it's basically Shark Tank, but for Canada. But I didn't, hadn't seen any shows. I didn't, you know, and I on purpose at that point didn't do any research because I didn't want to be starstruck if I came across her in the office. And so, so I met with the head of partnerships, the head of product, a partnerships manager. And then Kent and I sat down and he's like, okay, how were all the conversations? And I said, wow, like, you have really smart people here doing really interesting, like, innovative things. I, you know, it's weird having a conversation that's sort of an interview when you don't know what the job you're interviewing for is, but I'm here for it. It's cool. Like, I'm down with this. And so he said, okay, well, what did you learn from talking to these people? And I said, well, the one question I asked each of them is, how could I help you? You know, I've told you a little bit about my skill set. How could I complement what you're trying to achieve in your job? And so each person had their own answer about, if I waved a magic wand, what could I help them with? And so Ken said, oh my gosh, I'm relatively new here too. I don't know their answers. Can you tell me what they said? And so I told him what they wanted. And he said, well, I didn't give you a job description because I kind of wanted to see where you were leaning and what your strengths are. He said, but one of the roles I have in mind for you in my head is an enablement role where you're helping partnerships and sales with content to support them closing deals or partnerships. He said, does that sound interesting to you? And I said, let me get this straight. You kind of want me to build my own internal agency where I can produce content to help other teams. I was like, are you kidding me? When do I start?
That's so cool. And then it was just there. They just offered you the job.
Started 4 weeks ago.
No
yeah,
way.
Did you
chat with the founders?
So usually they have new hires that are, you know, director level or heads or maybe even sales. Like, you could just be an account manager. They usually want to meet you. But I think Michelle was filming Dragon's Den at the time and Andrew was away for a private dinner or some sort of VC thing. So Kent didn't want that to be a roadblock to me starting because they really needed someone to come in and own the content. And so, yeah, he said, if it's okay with you not to meet them until after you start, do you want to join June 24th? And I said, sure.
And let's talk about that. Let's talk about you meeting them for the first time, the founders. How was that?
Oh, my God. So this is like my third day at ClearBank and I'm in founder school doing sales training. And I walk back to my desk to get my phone, and there's two gentlemen in my path, and I'm about to go around them. But one of them kind of waves at me and goes, "Hey, you're new. You're in marketing, right?" And I said, "Yes." And so we start chatting, and he's like, "Yeah, I'm in sales. I'm a rep, blah, blah, blah." So then I, to be polite, turn to the guy next to him, and I go, "And you are?" And he goes, "I'm Andrew. Ooh. I co-founded ClearBank." I'm like, "Oh, no. I did not do my research. I didn't recognize him. He's not on the homepage." So it's like Michelle's face. And so I was like, "Oh no, oh no, oh no." And he goes, he's laughing. He thinks it's hilarious. He's not offended whatsoever, but I'm just like sort of sinking into the floor mentally. So that was my first interaction with Andrew. And then I think it was like maybe 5 minutes later, I go to the bathroom and Michelle's in there and she's getting ready for some dinner. And she's wearing like a hot pink dress. And I decide to bite the bullet on this one because I know who she is. I know she's a co-founder. I'm going to own this one. So I go, "Hey, Michelle and Juliana, I'm Nunu, head of marketing services." She goes, "Oh, hi." And like we're chatting. But then there's this woman in the stall near us that comes out, and I mentioned crazy because she asked me where I'd been working before. And it turns out the woman in the stall was a UX designer. So she starts side talking to me about like UX and crazy egg while Michelle's like standing over here. I'm like, "Oh my God, can I not have an awkward, like an unawkward conversation with these people?" But it actually, it was funny either way. And I ended up having really good conversations with both of them on the bus ride back from our work retreat. So I actually did have a quality conversation like later, like 2 weeks later, but that it was kind of a weird intro to them. But they're just such, oh my gosh, I have such a deep found respect for what they're building and how humble and chill they are about it and how excited they are about just getting us all accelerated and doing the best we can at our jobs.
That's cool. Those are great stories. Thank you for sharing your embarrassment.
Just gonna, you know, awkward Wednesday it on a Friday.
I want to ask you this question, and it's something that's been on my mind. And one of my friends tweeted about it, about what you do on your first 90 days when you're heading, leading a marketing team. Because I've noticed you've been head or director of marketing at a few companies, Plaster, Crazy Egg, and now ClearBank. What do you do? What is your game plan for the first 30 to 90 days?
Yeah, so that vastly depends on a lot of factors. You know, how big is the company? How big is the marketing team? Who's on it? What kind of tools and processes do they have in place or not? So I will talk a little bit about two different scenarios. So when I joined Referral Mob, it was literally five people that had all their desks pushed together in one room. And the CEO was on my right-hand side. The CTO was next to him. It was me, a salesperson, and then a part-time like recruiter. And so I was starting from scratch, basically, with all of the marketing. We had a website, but there's no inbound component to it. We didn't really have a customer acquisition strategy. So in the first 90 days, I had to get the lay of the land with all the tools that we had at my disposal. But then I had to go find a good content marketing agency and hire someone who specialized in Facebook ads to start acquiring customers through campaigns. So that was like one scenario where my first 30 to 90 days was that way. At Playster, the marketing team was way more established. We had a giant content library called the Academy. We had a handful of people already working on our messaging and our marketing initiatives. We had like a whole webinar series we were already doing. So it actually had a lot more for me to work off of. So in the first 90 days there, I actually had to make a really tough call about letting a few people go. So our VP of marketing, when I interviewed, was like, "Okay, so just so you know, as you're talking to people who might be on your team, that they might not be on your team for very long, one of the first things I'm going to have you do is take a lay of the land. And if you think that these people aren't qualified for their roles, we're going to let them go." And so that was a completely different scenario, of course. So I'm like talking to these people, knowing in the back of my head, I might have to have a really hard conversation with them. And the reason that that took place is sometimes in marketing, people end up on the team from other teams and they sort of just drift over because they want to do it. And people are like, "Sure, yeah, you can be our content marketer. Sure, you can be our whatever." But they don't have the background and there's no one to train them. So that was the case where I said, "Okay, you know, you aren't showing up to stand up and you don't seem to really want to be here, and it's taking you 4 days to write an outline for a blog post. Like, this is not an A player situation, and I feel comfortable even though I've only been here a week and a half telling you that you're not a good fit, because wow. I could hire someone who is qualified and can hit the ground running, and I don't have to tell that they should be attending meetings with the rest of the team. So that was tough. That was really tough, but that's what I had to do in my first 12 days, right? Wow. And so aside from that, I had to hire new people. Once those people were let go, I had to take stock of all the content we had because we had so much and figure out what was left to produce. You know, like, are there any gaps that sales is asking for, or partnerships is asking for? So I'd say the one constant in every marketing job where I've taken over the team is how do I get in touch with sales and figure out what people are asking on the phone? What does the objection handling process look like with customer success? What are the big pain points people are kicking and screaming about with the product? How do we educate people about that product? You know, what's rolling out as a new feature that people should get excited about? What's the rollout process like that for marketing strategy? So day one, start having one-on-ones, start attending team meetings, start building those bridges, because it's so easy to get siloed when you're a marketer, and you're not going to succeed if you're cut off from the rest of the company. And that's the easiest way to get laid off, honestly. It's like, no one knows who you are, what you do.
I know you're about to have a tour of ClearBank's spanking new office, so I'm going to ask one more question and then we can go from there.
Sure, go ahead.
What is your one piece of advice to marketers who aspire to one day become head of marketing or director of marketing of a tech company?
I feel like, so I saw this tweet the other day and it just spoke to me in such a deep level. It was someone listing all the things marketers are expected to know when you're hired. That. It was insane. Yeah. It was like SEO, PR, events, like data ops, data analysis, like all like 20 different tools. Like, you have to have 10 years of experience. Like, it was great. I'm like, and it's for peanuts and they give you no resources. Just, I was like, oh my God, I need therapy. Like, this is totally my experience too. And like, as a marketer, I'm expected to like roll around in data sheets for fun while I'm also being this creative unicorn that like can describe things in a way no one knows about. Don't fall into this trap of needing to know everything. Like, keep learning, keep exploring, keep taking classes, keep going to events and panels and conferences. Absolutely. But don't feel like you need to know it all. You never will. There's always going to be some shiny new thing people expect you to know. Do what you love and what you're passionate about, but be okay not knowing everything. Like, I will admit, I hate data. I don't like Google Analytics. It's my kryptonite. So, and I know that. I'm at peace with that. I don't need to know it. That's what specialists are for. You hire them on your team. They complement your gaps. It's fine. Like, do you. Be good at what you're good at and know what you're not good at. And like, if you want to learn, learn. But if you don't want to learn, you don't have to. Like, there's no way you're going to have this list of 30 bullet points. So, you know, if anyone's asking you for that, they're being very unreasonable. Don't fall into that. Yeah.
Exactly what Val mentioned, Val Geisler. It's like, you be focused on what you're good at and just be there. One final question. Where can people find you online? Where do you want them? What is your call to action?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter. My handle is Attack of the Text. I'm very active. I probably put out 3 or 4 tweets a day, depending on the day. So if you like musings on podcasts or beer or what's going on in the Toronto or Boston networking scene in tech, that's why you would follow me. I'm also on LinkedIn. If you're not trying to sell me something, you can connect with me and just shoot me a nice message saying you listen to this podcast. I will say, cool, you are not a robot trying to sell me SaaS platforms. Yep. So that's cool. I'm on Instagram. I'm at Jules, J-U-I-L-Z. If you want to see my roof deck or my obsession with new bars and restaurants in Toronto that I'm exploring. Nice. I'm really into ice cream right now. So if you want FOMO around ice cream you can't get because you're not in Toronto, you can do that as well.
I love ice cream and beer, so I'll follow you there. Awesome.
Yay, let's be friends.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate your time.
Yeah, of course. Happy to be here.
Hey, thanks for listening all the way until the end. And here is my gift for you for staying until this far. I want to share with you my three key takeaways from this podcast episode. There might be a lot more. First is really understand your customer's whole journey. Now, this is a theme that I keep hearing over and over again from some of the best marketers. Juliana's first step at achieving record-breaking revenue at Crazy Egg was to map out the whole customer experience from a lead who becomes a trial user, from a trial user who becomes a paying customer, from a paying customer who becomes an advocate. Then she took the steps to fix gaps in that journey. That's how she increased the trial to paid conversion there by 75% and achieved the highest revenue so far at Crazy Egg. Second, understand the trade-offs with your campaigns. For example, you can add 5 call to actions on a blog, which could result in more leads. But will those leads be qualified if you show a pop-up within 3 seconds of a visitor landing on your page? Probably not. That's what Juliana fixed with the redesign of the Crazy Egg blog layout. She added call to actions that are relevant and after visitors have visited more than half of an article. This way, she knows those readers are qualified and are interested in Crazy Egg's content. And finally, be helpful. It sounds so simple, but very powerful. When Juliana was interviewing at ClearBank, she talked to several department heads and asked them how she can help them. She built a bridge to each department head and helped her stand out as a candidate. Be helpful. What do you think? Is there any takeaways that I miss? I'd love to hear from my listeners. So you can reach out to me. You can find me on Twitter at RamleyJohn. My DM is open. Send me an email. I'd love to get an email as long as it's not spam. You're trying to sell me something. It's ramley@growthtoday.fm. I'd love to hear any takeaways that you have. Thank you for sticking around. If you'd love to support me, there's 3 ways to do that. First, share a tweet. Tell a friend about this podcast. Second, join my Growth Today Tribe mailing list and I will send you the cheat sheet from this episode. And I have created one for this episode. It is over 3 pages long. This episode is that good. Third, support my Patreon for as little as $2 per episode. There's going to be some amazing perks. You can go to patreon.com/growthtoday. There is an early adopter supporter package where you get 75% off the highest package, which is the unicorn level. With that, I announced that I have 2 early adopters so far, Jamie Ward from Las Vegas and Veronica from London, UK. I really appreciate both of you for supporting this podcast on Patreon. Thank you so much. You know what? Other than that, as always, keep on growing.